Hello. So I am Mo, the goddess. I'm also, I just opened the room here on Clubhouse, and I am also going to try to record a podcast at the same time. So this is all new to me. This is my first room actually by myself. So we're gonna see how it goes. I see that I have someone in the room with me. Welcome. Why don't you raise your hand and come to the stage so you can speak to me? Let's see. Hey there.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for pinging me. I got pinged. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting topic.
You got pinged? Okay, great. I think.
I guess you found some way to ping me with probably others, and I showed up.
Well, thank you for showing up. Let me see if I can ping some other folk then. Let me
Yeah,
see.
that's what I just did. I think I'm starting to ping right now as well.
Okay, because this is my first time doing this. So I don't really know what I'm doing. So anyway, I don't know if you heard me, but I said that I am also doing a podcast at the same time
Yes.
that I
Okay.
am
Well,
in.
tell me your podcast name, or what do you go by on your podcast?
Well, my
How do people find
podcast is The Goddess Glow Up. And you
it?
can find
Okay.
it on Apple, you can find it on Spotify, on all podcast. I think it's like 10 different podcast outlets.
Right. Okay. I'm gonna find you now. Let's see if I can search it. The
Thank
Goddess Glow
you.
Up.
The
Let's see.
Goddess Glow Up.
Absolutely. I'm looking for you right now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to learn how to do podcasts and start rooms myself. So we're all kind of new to it all, but I'm enjoying the challenge.
Right, exactly. There's actually, when you first start, there's actually a bit of anxiety involved. Hey, Susan, I see Susan has just come in the room. Susan, you found me? Great, thank
Yeah.
you. Hey,
So let's see.
Susan.
Subscribe. Awesome. Subscribe. All right. Nice.
Okay, great.
Okay. So when you subscribe, that means I can kind of. Now, are you allowed to or able to? Because I know nothing about it because I've never started one. When you do live podcasts, can you like invite people like you do here at Clubhouse as well? When you're going live on your podcast?
No, actually, it's pre-recorded. So you
Okay,
pre-recorded.
got you. Unless you're interviewing with a person or something. Okay,
Exactly.
got
Now,
you.
when you're interviewing with a person, then you can, maybe go live on Facebook or some other social platform, and then have people call in that way. But yeah, that's the
I'd
way
love
you
to
do it.
be featured with co-host or featured with you one day because I love the title, The Goddess Glow Up. And if you see my handle beside my name, my hustle is hard, and people wonder, okay, what does that mean? And it's a conversation starter just simply by my sheer kind of enthusiasm about life. I think ambition in my profession and what I do. So I love when that conversation comes up because as far as being a feminine female and strong in my convictions is why I named myself that and I live by that. So yeah.
Well, that's great. Okay, so introduce yourself. Tell us what your name is actually, and let's find out what you do.
Okay, well thank you so much for asking. So my name is Renee Gant. I reside in Atlanta, Georgia, from Los Angeles, and I am a Bitcoin billionaire and document. I started in an early adopted time when Bitcoin didn't even have a value or even a name. I started teaching myself just because I wanted to challenge my brain on how to play high stakes poker, chess, and blackjack online. I didn't, never gone to a casino. I'm not a gambler. But I just wanted to challenge my brain to do something that fascinated me. And while playing against this computer, because I didn't play with others, I started winning tokens. Hundreds, thousands, thousands of tokens, millions of tokens, billions of tokens that accumulated to, you know, over a billion tokens over years. It didn't take overnight, it was just over the years. And here today, that token is now the Bitcoin.
Wow, amazing. That's an amazing, yes. That's amazing.
Yeah, so you know how they have that phrase, oh, you never know who your neighbor is. Oh, that's the millionaire next door, and you don't know, they're just an unassuming person. And that's kind of what's kind of happened to me. And just the 1st of December, I got invited to look at this company called GS Partners, and they are a crypto blockchain and hard asset company that pays you in Bitcoin. They pay you to learn what the blockchain is, what cryptocurrency does, how to use it, why crypto even exists. And so from the 1st of December to the 15th of December, I just start sharing with people just on social media, just kind of passively sharing it with other people, because people were like, oh my gosh, do you see the price of Bitcoin now? If I had only gotten it earlier, and now there's no reason that you can't get involved with it, because now we get paid in it. So for 15 days, I shared and shared and shared, and about 76 people said okay, and they registered, and it's free to register, and you buy a business package that gives you all the videos and all the training and access to what the industry is about. And every time someone registers and get a business package, you get paid a micro payment of Bitcoin. So I did something else that was pretty phenomenal. I earned a full Bitcoin in the 15-day period. And at the time, from the 1st to the 15th, the Bitcoin was worth $41,000.
Whoa.
$41,000 in 15 days, I earned a full Bitcoin and a few other micropayments of it. So from the 15th through January 1st, I kept inviting other people. In a total of 35 days, if I had cashed in my Bitcoin that I earned, it was $120,000. So that's six figures in 35 days. And I've just been going and going and going ever since. And here it is, February 1st, I've earned even more. And now I've got people globally now. I go, whoever sees my post or whoever I invite, they're inviting other people. So it's been pretty amazing. So I've got to start a club, then I'm going to start a room sharing how to become a Bitcoin billionaire, because it's just that easy. So my goal is to help 2,021 people in this year become a millionaire by way of earning and not having to pay, not having to invest in Bitcoin and Ethereum. The other superior coins called Ethereum. So yeah, it's been, and I do it all from my bedroom on my smartphone from home.
Interesting, Renee. Interesting. So yeah, that sounds like a great topic, especially to start a room with, and to have you on my podcast, because how many women out there would love to be billionaires, especially when they can do it from the comfort of their home?
Exactly. And it sounds so unreal, but it's real. Past June, I subscribed to Forbes magazine, and I had my subscription had ended, and I kept saying, why haven't I got my subscription? So one day I was in the grocery store, and the June issue had Serena Williams on the front cover, and I immediately was drawn to the cover because it was a strong image of her. But the actual title of the magazine was The Richest Self-Made Women. And immediately when I saw that title, I'm like, ooh, Serena's on the cover now. One day that could be me. And it lists about at least thousands and thousands, but the top 100 wealthiest self-made women. So the other last week I was in a room, and the room was called What's Your Dream? What is Your Purpose? And my purpose is to help other people reach a certain level of success if that's what they want. But my dream has always been to do two things. In the last 4 years, I wrote a complete storyboard of what I want to talk about on a TED stage if I got the opportunity to get on TED Talk. And then the second one was, how would I reach an editor, a writer, or whomever for Forbes to be one day put on the front cover of Forbes magazine, and it's on my dream board. And sure enough, as I'm speaking what I'm telling you, someone popped in the room. And it's, honest to God, it was like the divine, the universe heard what I was saying. And a gentleman walked in, he just popped in his room. He said, well, you do know they're taking new concepts and ideas to want to get nominated to speak on TED Talk. I can send you some information. He says, you need to write your submission in before the 21st of December. And I'm like, what? So then I finished sharing about Forbes magazine. And he said, that's actually really easy. All you got to do is write into the editors, share your story. And what you just shared, I guarantee you they're going to contact you. It's not as hard as you think. And I'm like, in one complete moment, when you know what you want and you speak it into existence and, you know, kind of manifest it, it happens. It could happen just like that. So that was pretty incredible. The one highlight of my life here on Clubhouse, that day happened. I'm like, wow, that boosted my ego. So, and not my ego, but that boosted my confidence, rather, to speak up, because I've always been a quiet person, just kind of internal, kind of a lone wolf, not really, you know, I just move around and do what I do, but I just have found my confidence being able to speak publicly on Clubhouse, I think is preparing me to speak on a TED Talk stage.
Great. So you popped in here based on, and congratulations, Renee, that's an amazing story. But you popped in this room. This room is how to become a badass after childhood trauma. Everything that you've just gone over is such badassness. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about me. The reason why I opened this room, first of all, my name is Mo the Goddess. And the reason why I opened this particular room is because I myself suffered a lot of childhood trauma where my confidence and my self-esteem was very low. Part of that trauma was, related to body image, child abuse, sexual abuse, and later on graduating over into domestic violence when I became an adult. I raised two sons by myself and kind of, one day woke up and I decided that I didn't want to be a victim anymore because, everything that I was trying to do or I wanted to do, that childhood trauma had transferred over into my work relationships, my friendships, my intimate relationships, everything that I started up, it reflected some trauma, some residue from the trauma that I suffered. So I pretty much,
it all carries over into our lives. You don't address it, it just spills over, and you're wondering why different relationships and different, for friendships and all of those, intertwined people that we come in contact with sometimes go awry or you're not connected. And I get it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And because if you're not connected to yourself, essentially, you're not going to be able to connect to anyone. And if you don't love yourself or feel good about yourself, then how can you really love or feel good about anything else that's happening in your life? So the reason why, I share that with you is because you found some type of interest in coming in this room, I'm assuming because it resonated with you in some way.
It did. And I'll share the trauma that occurred in my life once you finish yours, because it surfaces. I was just on the phone with my ex, sharing with him about a confrontational moment that I had with my daughter a week ago. And I literally just got off the phone with him, and then that your topic popped up. And I'm like, wow, that just connected me with all kind of emotions. Right now I've got butterflies in my stomach hearing you because of what I'm going to share with you in a moment. That just completely altered my life.
Well, that, you know, I wanted to share with you why I started the room, but my question to you, and wait a minute, let me acknowledge Susan. Hey, Susan, I see you, girl. Come in and we're gonna have Renee tell her story, but can you introduce yourself to Renee as well?
Hi, Renee. I'm Susan, and I'm really fascinated. So I'm very content right now, just kind of listening, and and then I'll share my story after. Okay, Mona.
Sounds
okay. Great. So Renee, go ahead and continue.
So as a kid, I'm a middle child of two sisters. My mom raised three kids as a single mom. She was a young mother, so by the time she was 26, she had three girls. She got remarried when I was probably five to someone that was actually younger than her, who we looked up to like a big brother. He didn't come as a father figure. Me not having my biological dad in my life, he just kind of was a fixture in the household as opposed to a father figure, because he was just this prankster, joker kind of guy. He came from a pretty large family, seven siblings, and we just kind of had to adapt to, you know, literally my mother was single one day, and then one day she goes, I got married. I'm like, you got married and we don't even know this person? Like, who does that?
Wow.
So yeah, let's start there. And I'm starting way back. So she, prior to her getting married, being a single mom, she had me at the age of 17. And I guess, you know, we do what we have to do to get by. And it never dawned on me the trauma that may have happened, the tragedies that happened. Once I learned how I became, I was a product of a young girl who dated a man, gosh, 10 years older than her, who was married. So I'm a product of an affair that occurred that she always resented. Like, the person, my biological dad, did not stick around, and it was all due to the fact that here it is, he's cheating on his wife, who he had a family with a young teenager at 17, and then I'm the product of that. So that was when I learned what that was and why he was never present. And then learning from my aunts, my grandmother, well, he wanted to be there, and your mom gave him an ultimatum: if you don't leave your family and come help me out, you will never see her again. So I never knew why. It was always, why does my dad want to know me, and where is he? Why do I not know him? To finding out, it was like, yep, you did this to me, and if you don't, you know, support me, you'll never see her. So it became, I was the, you know, kind of, you know, sometimes people use children as a pawn in their situation. And her having the hurt, anger, resentment, whatever occurred toward him, spilled over to me. So she reminded me that I was the mistake, that shouldn't have happened. She started using her bitterness, her anger, her resentment, her pain to evoke toward me. And so as a kid, all I said was, if I just behave, and if I just do what she expects, if I just am nice, if I look at grades, if I'm great in sports, if I just do everything that my mother would be so proud of me, she would treat me differently. And it never changed her behavior, her actions, and her treatment. And I became her punching bag, emotionally, verbally, sometimes physically. And I'm like, how does a mom attack a kid because of her pain of what happened, and it was not my fault. So I had to find a way to build my wall and build my confidence to protect myself, even in the household, of being blamed for things I didn't do, being cursed out about things that I wanted to do, being told you weren't meant to be, to where I wish you weren't. All the aggressive anger, bitter that she felt, she had no problem with unleashing it on me. To where my youngest sister used to say, "Mommy, why are you treating Renee like that? What did she do?" And she's like, "You butt out. If you want me to treat you like that, don't you question my actions." And so I went within. I had to just shut down emotionally to protect myself. So I became this just very ferocious reader to escape. So my punishment to her, to me, was if she didn't like something I did that day or what I looked like or it didn't matter what it was. Go to your room and read. You know, that was her punishment. Go to your room and read. So my reading became my escape, because I can like read a book and it takes me places that I always never knew about. And by the time I became 17, like her, never dated, never had a boyfriend, had to kind of sneak under the radar, had a guy that I liked who, and I had, at the time at 17, I had a babysitting job, and he found out where the job was, where the home that I babysit these kids, came over, and, you know, as young men do, if you love me, if you like me, you would do this, and force himself on me. I became pregnant. That experience was not a great experience. I didn't accept it as rape. I just accepted it, oh, my boyfriend, you know, thought and told me if I didn't care about him, so I gave in to him. At the same age as my mom had me, I became pregnant.
Wow.
And it was just, I was in denial. I was like, no, this didn't happen. The night it happened, I literally, when I got home after my babysitting job, I took a bath, and I remember sitting in water, and I sat in water, and then I saw the water ripple with pink, reddish. I'm like, why am I bleeding? Like, I was so naive, had never had to talk, had never been told these are the things that'll happen in the event. My mother with girls had never talked to her girls about what could happen if you have unprotected sex. Literally never having those conversations from your mom, and then it happens to you. It was shock on top of shock on top of shock. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how am I going to tell her this? What is she going to think of me? What's going to happen next? And I, in my mind, had made up my mind. I am not ready for motherhood. I do not want to go through and bring this in my life with not being prepared. So I decided, made my mind up that I wanted to have an abortion. And I told the guy, I said, I'm not ready for this. I said, I want to finish school. I want to go to college. I want to have my life. And he's like, no, I'm not ready for a kid either. So he and I agreed to have the abortion, not telling my mother. Somehow, as a mother's instinct is, the day that my doctor called and said, you had your recent checkup. And I know my mom did it on purpose. She had scheduled my first pap smear ever. I never had a female checkup until I was 17. Something about me she kind of sensed. And so she's like, okay, it's time to make your appointment. She makes my doctor's appointment. She didn't come to the office. When my doctor had the results, he called my house. He didn't tell me in the office. He called my house to give me to tell me. I pick up a phone in the kitchen when we had landlines. My mom was in her bedroom picking up the phone. She heard the doctor tell me, your test results came back and you're pregnant. I'm like, no, I'm not. He said, yes, you are. So hearing that, he says, so when you get a chance to come back to the office, we need to have a conversation. You need to tell your parents. And I did tell her. She heard it and didn't tell me she heard it. Long story short, the day that I decided to do the abortion, she kind of knew. I left the house one day really early. She's like, where are you going? What do you think you're doing? You think I don't know about you're being pregnant? I know. And if you're thinking about going to do what you think you're doing, she says, you better hope you don't come back to my house in a body bag, because I want no parts of that. That was like a whole other story. She sent my uncle, her brother, to come find me. And at the time, we were living in Connecticut. We had moved from Los Angeles to Connecticut because she was pursuing her degree at Yale University. So she gets my uncle to come and literally stop me from making one of the biggest mistakes that would have been for me. And and I subsequently end up carrying a baby to full term, having my child. Even during the pregnancy, my mom had taken me and put me in a home for unwed mothers, not telling me what it was. She drops me off upstate Connecticut and says that I'll be back in 8 months because I was in my first trimester. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And the place that she took me for unwed mothers was a place where young girls gave up their child for adoption. And I had not consented or even considered once I was forced to keep the baby. I'd never considered adoption. And I'm like, you would drop me off and take me and force me to go somewhere to get my baby for adoption. She says, well, you didn't want the baby and I'm not gonna help you raise a child. So that was the only alternative. And when I realized where I was at this place, I ran away. I came back home. I'm like, no, you're not gonna force me to give a child up for adoption after carrying a baby for for 9 months. That's not gonna happen. Came home, went back to my regular school. And the whole time I'm pregnant, in her household, she treated me like crap, literally. So that trauma of her behavior growing up, the trauma going through her behavior with me being pregnant, she said I was her mistake. Then I'm now the embarrassment, and I'm internalizing all this stuff, and inside suffering, feeling like, okay, I'm dealing with this. What kind of mother am I going to be? How am I going to bring this life? I didn't know if I was having a boy or a girl. I have a child, she was a girl. So it's just like all this stuff that's just emotionally happening to me, not having an outlet, not sharing, not being able to discuss all the stuff that I had gone through with her. I decided to just kind of put my big girl pants on and decide, okay, this is happening. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the best mother ever. Like, I want to prove to myself I'm capable. I'm confident. I want my baby to now have the things in life that I didn't have advantages and opportunities to have.
Well, let me interject really quick, Renee, because first and foremost, thank you so much for sharing this. Girl, this is a movie.
It is not a piece of movie. It's like I contemplate so many times, literally writing this stuff.
You have to, Renee.
Lifetime with it, because the story is more painful than you would think. At 7 months old, my child was taken from me. Like, literally went missing till she was 22.
Oh, my goodness.
Child of abduction from a person that I knew who went underground with my baby.
So let me ask you yeah. This question. How are you able, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I am now 52.
Okay, so you're 52, which is relatively young. I'm 50. How have you managed to sit here right now and be able to tell this story and not be breaking down? How have you managed? Because it's been probably maybe a little over 4 years that I have been able to share my story without crying all the way through it. Actually, this morning I woke up weeping because there is obviously some areas in my healing that I have not really, really completed yet, that I have to continue. But how have you managed to be able to sit here right now and share that? Because there's still, for me, a lot of shame involved. Like, it's shameful to say, oh, my mother treated me like this, when everybody else seems to have a loving mother, a kind mother. It's always been really shameful. You know, what are people going to think about me? I must be the one. If a mother doesn't love me enough, if a mother treats me like this, then it must be something wrong with me. So how have you been able to get through it?
I'm going to tell you, it took me years to own it. It took years for me to heal. I'm still not fully healed, but what
what has happened is they tell my story and help somebody that went through it. And I remember people over years and years saying, you have this sadness about you. Are you okay? Strangers. Because I did. I wore this, like, this badge of hurt and people. I'm like, no, I'm fine. Not knowing people could see this. I literally, my eyes would be teary on days going to work, going through life and not being able to tell my story. So when I realized, Renee, you got to relieve yourself. You got to free yourself before you break, because I'm holding all of this pain and just God. I mean, it was, imagine if I had known she had died, I probably would have felt differently, or known that she wasn't, but not knowing where she is was the worst anguish anyone could go through. And it does, and it did, and it still does feel like a Lifetime movie that you see on Lifetime, because this kind of thing happens. And there was a story about a young girl who actually lives in Atlanta now, I think, where she was taken at birth from a nurse in a hospital. Do you remember the movie Niecy Nash did?
I do.
She was the nurse that killed the baby. When I saw that story, I'm like, oh my God. And that woman did that, hid for years, for I think 18 years, until her biological family found her. And the woman, she went to jail. And guess what happens right now? To this day, this very day, the woman that did this to me, that took my child and raised me, knew me. I entrusted in her to help me when I, at 7 months old, my baby was 7 months old. I needed her help. I moved to Atlanta, single mom moving to Atlanta, to the only family members that I had here, coming out of just not knowing anything about the city. I needed to get on my feet, and I called this woman who actually used to own the house that my mother rented from when I was pregnant at the time. She was there for me during my whole entire pregnancy. She was there for my mom's classes. She was shopping. She took me to eat. In fact, she bought the nursery for my bedroom to make sure my child had everything. She also put a nursery in her home where I actually was her babysitter for her three sons. So when she did all this stuff for me, not knowing she was the person who did this to me, I realized it was her setup. When I found myself going through, at 7 months old, this child was 7 months old, not having a way to get on my feet, get an apartment, making sure I have funding for daycare, I called her. I said, her name is Khalila. I said, Khalila, I said, I'm in Atlanta. I said, and I just found a job, and I need about 4 to 6 weeks to get my place and get it furnished so I can have a place for Anissa and I. And she says, well, what do you need me to do? I said, can you keep her until I get myself settled? I said, I'm at my aunt's house. She's got nine kids. Chaos is going on, and I cannot handle going back and forth to work with my baby there and not being attended to. She said, sure. She flew me back to Connecticut. She says, I got your back. Get yourself settled and let me know so I can fly back, make sure that you and Anissa are fine. I trusted this woman with my baby's life, with my life. And she went underground and ran for years with my child. So this wasn't like a random kidnapping. This wasn't a stranger. This was someone I knew. Someone I knew since I was 15 years old. I was her teenage babysitter, and she literally stole my child and went underground. No one could find her.
And it's no, along with all the other trauma that you've actually experienced, yeah. It's almost as if, you know, then you have to deal with that guilt, because I don't know if you felt this way, but just listening to your story, it's like now, having gone through all that and just still struggling and trying to get on my feet, now I've literally handed over my baby.
Exactly.
So that's more guilt that you have to deal with. So, oh my God.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Yeah, I would love to talk to you further. I hope that you follow me here, and you also follow me on Instagram at I Am Goddess One, because I would love for this to be a conversation moving forward, because you are definitely a badass girl, and I want to hear more about it. I know we only have a little bit of time here, but this is episodes and episodes, and this can be healing for someone else. The fact that you're able to sit here with us and share this story, this is definitely healing for someone else. So I would love to bring you on, even as a moderator with me, and do this room again. Susan, share with us any input or anything that you would like to share as far as the topic is concerned.
Well, I think for both of you, because Mona, I know your story and your we've talked before, but Renee, also both of you, absolutely, you have a book and more, but a book in you. And one way I would recommend to take the next step, you know, it can be daunting thinking about writing this whole book. But I'll tell you, the first thing I did last year, I wrote a chapter in a collaborative book with other women. And this last one, you all can go take a look at it on Amazon. It's coming out. It's on Amazon now, actually, but on February 2nd. It's called Find Your Voice, Save Your Life, okay? Mm-hmm. So I wrote my story. My story was essentially about a salary negotiation and just financial issues and whatnot for women, and how I stood up for myself during a salary negotiation this past year. But there are other stories in this that women wrote about that are just amazing. And I know this woman's going to do probably another book, because there was so much interest in this book, but it's something you all could take a look at. There's another book called The Ultimate Guide to Self-Healing. I wrote a chapter in that book. And what writing a chapter does for you, it allows you to, it's just 3,000 words. It's not daunting. You have a person, this woman, Laura DeFranco, who I worked with, who wrote these books. You can kind of look them up. And it allows you to get your foot in the door as an author. It allows you to introduce yourself without all the work involved with writing a book. So I just want to recommend that for each of you, because of these stories that I think are so critical, that would help other people so much. So I just want to first say that. I don't have words. I mean, I just tried to write down notes about questions I wanted to ask, things I wanted to know, but it's just too much. And I'll just tell you, I'm born in 1961, so I'm 60. I just turned 60, so you guys are, you know, younger than me. At the beginning, though, I was stunned by how children have to understand and overcome trauma. Like, as an adult, when I'm dealt with trauma, like, as an adult, it's really hard to not understand that you're not the point, that the other person who's doing the issue or saying the words or having the reaction to something, it's their issue. And as an adult, that's hard to process, let alone as a child, because children aren't meant to process that stuff. Children aren't meant to it. You're not designed for it. And yet here you are, you know, doing that. And I'm just stunned. There's just so much here that would, I don't even know where to begin, but would help other people. I'm so amazed that you both, you know, can share your stories here. I think I've never associated myself with childhood trauma, but, you know, I think for me, you know, I was one of seven kids. My mom's a single mom and my dad died when I was 8. But I think I shut off to that whole thing, and I never processed trauma per se in my life, but it's there. But as an adult processing trauma, holy crap, it's so hard. And, you know, with my divorce was traumatic and death is traumatic, and yet here you were processing this trauma throughout your life. I'm just, anyway, I'll stop there, but I do want to encourage both of you. Find a way to get your story out. If it's too daunting to think about all the work of doing a book, because a entire book is daunting. Join in with other women on these collaborative book processes. You'll get your story out there, and then you'll be able to continue from there to write your entire book. Just an idea.
You know, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. And again, sharing it, it's like another release for me. I started writing a book about my experience and rearing from my mother, and I titled it Cold as Ice, because she was so cold about her, her how she was to me. And the more I started writing, I literally had gotten up to 6 chapters, I found myself reliving the horror, the trauma, the experience of her, and it was hurtful. It was so hurtful. I said, I thought it would help me by writing it, but it was drudging up the memory, and I destroyed the book. I said, I can't keep holding this. Writing it is bringing up so much pain for me. I said, I gotta get rid of this. I don't want to keep facing it. I don't want to keep dealing with it, because it was binding me, keeping me bound to anger. And I was 28 years old at the time when I finally said, okay, enough is enough, Renee. Stop reliving your past and live today. Move forward today, going forward. And I just got rid of it because it kept bringing up stuff. Then when I decided I wanted to, like you just suggested, I wanted to tell my story, write my story, and then go after this woman, because the statute of limitation is not gone. It doesn't run away. Exposing her, and I told my daughter, I said, listen, I said, I need to share my story. It's my story, but it does have, it will definitely bring to light what happened to you. And she begged me not to.
Listen, let me just say this too, Renee. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that reminds me, I've been trying to write my book for the past, are you guys there?
She's coming back, I think. I see her.
Oh, her phone probably rang.
Yeah.
No, the phone didn't ring. I don't know what happened. It just kicked me out. But,
Hey, Mona, when that happened, I noticed somebody else came on. I don't know if that has, and then they left again. So
it was Trace. It was a lady named Trace. She popped in and popped out. But
yeah, I saw her in here. Well, the thing is, when I wanted to write my book, I was writing it, but every time I sat down to write, I would find blockages, and what the blockages were related to was, oh my God, if I tell my story, then I'm going to expose my mother. My mother's still living. Yes. I'm going to expose my children. I'm going to expose her ex-husband. I'm going to expose all these people that are still living. And, you know, I was afraid. I was afraid because I was raised like, don't tell what happens in this house. You better not tell what happens in this house. You know, and then I had to tell myself, just this year I started writing again, and I still find myself sometimes being blocked, but I had to tell myself this year, you cannot allow these people to continue to have power and control over you. This is your story. If it exposes them, then maybe it's time for them to be exposed. But that is what kept me for the past 3 years in struggle mode. You know, I'm like, I need to release this. I need to get this out of me. I think it will be healing. I can't just walk away from it because it's always on my mind. I need to write this book. But like I said, you know, I had to step in, stand in my truth and say, this is my truth. And unfortunately, the light is going to be shed on a lot of people. And that's not my issue anymore. That is their problem.
It's their issue.
Right.
And this is what my daughter did. She says, sometimes she's open to it. Sometimes she's like, Mom, don't. She says, I am at the height of my career. She is, she works for the CDC. She's also very, very connected to a lot of high power, very political people because of what her career is. And now she's in the military. And she says, I understand you want to share this. I understand this is healing for you. She says, but the minute you do that, it's going to expose me. And I don't want reporters. I don't want the story to now become my issue for, because you're healing, because you need to share. She says, let sleeping dogs lie. And I said, sweetie, I cannot. I said, I understand protecting you. I said, when you write a book, you write a movie, you can protect the innocent. And I said, you are the innocent one in this party. I said, but what happened needs to be shared, because this person still lives, and she, guess what, Mona, she still acknowledges this woman as her mom. There's a love hate between them. She still acknowledges, it's almost like she has the what is that syndrome, you know how kids are abducted in cult like groups. She still has this connection with her.
Stockholm syndrome.
Stockholm, she still has it. She emotionally fears this woman until she's mad at her, and then she dumps on me about this relationship she still has this woman. I said, why haven't you freed yourself from her now, knowing that your story, your history, your facts of what happened? And she can't break away from it. She won't separate herself. And I said, no, no worries, you're an adult, make your own decision. But her saying to me not to air this, to share this and publicly put this out there, she doesn't want to be approached about her whole abduction / adoption, illegal adoption, as it relates to her career path and where she's headed. She is a second lieutenant in the military. Her mentor is Colin Powell. Her prior mentor was John Lewis before he passed. Everyone that she's connected to, she feels as though that's some part of her life she does not want to be brought to light because of where she's headed. And I'm saying, like, wow. So she cares about what other people think. She fears of the what it's going to do to her career, and that's what's important to her. And I said, okay, to protect you, I could change, you know, it doesn't have to, your name doesn't ever have to be mentioned, but my story needs to be told. So I'm struggling with that, because she asked me to please don't do this, don't expose this, not right now.
And wow, that's even more hurt, because she still has a relationship with the woman who abducted her. So that's another slap in your face when she has a continued relationship with this woman. So no, I can't tell you what to do, but this is definitely your truth. And I believe that there is healing in expressing that.
And can I just tell you both that issue that you're talking about how complicated it is with family, so many other women have that exact same issue that they're struggling with. So just know you're not this individual person with this bizarre complication of how do you go take your next step. You're not alone with that.
I feel like I'm stuck again, like I once was. I feel like I'm here again. I went through all of the, but I feel I've healed. There's still so much pain, but now I'm silenced by protecting my child who went through the same traumas, that's probably worse than me.
All I can say is that you're not alone in how to handle it, okay? If you look at this book, Find Your Voice, Save Your Life, you're going to see women that told pretty freaking traumatic stories. Some of them, I was told, used false names, quite frankly. Pseudonyms. Some people do it that way. Some people might do it the way where they won't name the names, but your situation you're in, don't feel trapped, okay? I know it's complicated. I know it's complicated, but do not feel trapped, because you're going to find a way to give your story and present your story. You're going to find a way out of it, because people, you're not alone. Just want to know that this complication you're experiencing, you are not alone, and you'll figure it out.
I'll figure it out. I will, because even if I'm not so detailed, descriptive in it to protect her, there is a way to do it. It's just when am I going to put the attention and time to it? As topics come up, and like you started in the beginning, Mona, it's like when I saw that topic, all I saw was childhood trauma. I didn't even see that how badass. After I just saw childhood trauma, and it just triggered me, and I showed up. I literally said, "Oh wow." And I just had gotten off the phone with my ex talking about a confrontation that I had with my daughter last week. I gave her something and she questioned, she's untrusting. Her untrusting of me is because of this, the lie she was told as to how she became, was taken. Not, and the woman will be honest with her. Do you know my daughter every year messages me and asks me, Mom, when is my birthday? What time was I born? Where was I born? And I tell her, year after year. Well, the woman changed her date of birth to do an illegal adoption. I said, do you realize your adoption, the way that it took place? She did it. She changed your birthday by a day to ensure if I should ever look for you, that you wouldn't be found. I could not find you because of documentations that she created to ensure that if I went to the police, if I reported her the kidnapping, that you wouldn't be found. I said, you keep asking year after year because some part of you don't believe me what day you were born. Guess what? Vital Statistics has your birth records. It's public information. And I'm going to tell you the same thing year after year that you asked me, because in her mind, she still wants to trust and believe what this woman is saying, and she wants to she's comparing notes. Because she's still going through her inner struggles, but she doesn't want to have the confrontation with this lady because she fears her. And then me being honest with her, telling her my truth, and then the lady's son, the biological son of this woman, he confirmed the story. She said, Mom did take you. She did make us shut up. She told us not to say a word. She did go underground. He confirmed everything of what happened.
Renee, yeah. When you write about this or speak about this in a TED Talk, whatever you do, think of the, I'm just going to tell you, the floodgates are going to open in terms of other people who've experienced what you experienced in many ways, shapes, and forms, many people involved in what you're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. And the floodgates are going to open for how many people are just hidden in what they feel is shame and fear, yeah, and isolation, that your story is going to open the floodgates.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to help expose, but it's going to help heal. If somebody finds healing and me sharing, that's not, I don't even know if that's even my reason, but I still must heal. I still must, and it's not about, at first it was about my anger about what happened. So I kind of bottled that up, but then, did I want to, am I saying this? Am I sharing this? What is my reason? I'm healing through the process, but saying it publicly and exposing it, putting it in writing, producing it or producing it to a movie or publishing it in a book, I question myself is why? What am I going to, at the end of this, what's going to come of it? Is it going to hurt other people? Is it going to hurt my child? I go through all those battery of questions about what. And I'm thinking about everybody else but me. It's about other people. So I'm like, her, am I concerned about what other people are going to think and what's going to happen? And this woman now is agoraphobe. She's got health issues and agoraphobe doesn't even leave her house. That's because of her paranoia of what she's done and how it's going to affect her life. I can care less, but I do care. You know, and it's like, those are the struggles now that I deal with. You know.
Yeah, and I think you need to get into, and this is just my personal opinion, what helped me was getting into putting myself first over everyone else, because, you know, I spent most of my life worrying about what someone else was going to think, what they were going to say, how they were going to feel, continuously putting my feelings and my well-being on the back burner to save everyone else. So when you can get into a place where you come first, regardless to whoever, your daughter is grown now, so you don't have to protect her anymore. She's not a baby. You know what I'm saying? And I know that there is guilt involved in what happened, but at the same time, you have to save you. You have to rescue you. You have to release you. So it's not a matter of what are you going to gain from it. It is getting it out of you. It's releasing. It's healing. We have the power to heal ourselves if only we give ourselves permission to heal. Sometimes we become so addicted to holding on to that pain, even though we think that we've processed it. We think that, you know, it transmuted over and out to something else. And like I said, I'm 50 years old and I woke up this morning literally in tears, going back to that five-year-old little girl and saying to myself, like, oh my God, this is an area that I need to address so that I can move on to do the things that I want to do in life and do them with confidence and be successful at it. So
almost like when we sweep things under the carpet, it always
surfaces. It comes back. It comes back.
What happened to me, I'm going to cap it and then we don't have to even discuss it anymore, is that I went through all of my teenage 20s, 30s, 40s, afraid of having another child, afraid of being in a marriage that I had to discuss what happened to my child. And I have prevented myself by working, being a workaholic, so that I didn't even have to deal with, okay, how can I freely start a family, be married, and not having the beautiful experience of raising my child, bringing another child in the world. I went through that crap and it stifled me. It literally, and I now here it is, I'm 52. I've never been married. I've never had another child. And it, because I always told myself, that's how my mother was to me. What kind of mother am I going to be? I went through all of that crap. And I get angry because I held my life up. I stopped and blocked myself because of that experience. That trauma, that's the story, the aftermath of what that stuff does to me. And I'm really like, wow, why did I do that? How did I not move forward? And just because I felt like if I do this, I'm dishonoring her, or I'm putting my new life and my new experience and my new children before her. It's just been a battle, an eternal battle.
And you've even robbed yourself from knowing how motherhood would be for you.
I absolutely love it. When I'm around people's children, they gravitate to me. I have my inner child comes out and it's just like, wow, this could have been me. I just stopped. I had three proposals and turned them down. And when I introduce myself and I come in the room, I've said this even on Clubhouse, I'll say, hello, my name is Renee Gant. I said, I've been proposed to 3 times, turned them all down, never been married, but divorced once. And they're like, what do you mean? If you've never been married and you've been proposed to 3 times and turned down, how the heck did you get divorced? My divorce was I emancipated myself from my mother. That's the divorce. And so it's an icebreaker, conversation starter, but it doesn't have to do with my story, but it just completely opens me up to being, you know, available for people to hear, because I get their attention when I say that. I introduce myself and those are the exact words I use. And I'm like, why am I doing this? What am I getting from doing this? But it's kind of like an internal joke for me, because it's really it did happen. I'd never been married. I was proposed to 3 times and said no, but I got divorced. And I'm like, okay, that's a title. That's a story in itself. You know, but
you have so much to unpack, Renee, and I definitely would love to speak to you further. I so appreciate you coming into the room and sharing with us. I want
Mona, can I say one thing? You nailed that. I'm 60 and I'm only realizing now I will live and I will die. And I have one life to live, and it is my life, and you have to live like
there
that.
There is definitely a deeper story here.
By all of our fear about what other people think, the impact on other people, blah, 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 there's a controlling aspect to that, because everybody is responsible for their own life, and everybody will process what happens in their own life eventually. But you're responsible for your life. And if there's this story to tell, you trust, just trust that your daughter will be able to process however you tell your story. The people that you love, they will learn or know and be able to process for their own lives as their own lives go on, what they have to do. But the real question is what you have to do, because you have one life. So I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah. And so, we'll go in more detail, Mona, because this conversation alone
just gave me another like badge of bravery. And like you said, how do you tell this, share this with virtual strangers virtually and not break? I built this armor of strength to go through my life. So everything I go after with complete, utter confidence that I'm never going to fail another thing in my life, because those were failures to me. And it was due to my fault, but I never gave myself an opportunity to fail in anything. I look at your page, Mona. I look at your amazing work that you've done with yourself and your body and your strength. And I'm like, okay, now that's a woman that I look up to, that I strive for.